Friends, it is July 3rd, 2022. You are tuned into Canadian Patriot Radio, and I'm your host, Critch. What are we going to do today, my friends? We're going to listen to an oil billionaire tell us exactly what's going on with inflation. We're going to focus on the fact that James Topp has made it to Ottawa all the way there across Canada with zero, absolutely zero mainstream media coverage. We've got doctors speaking out against Canada's course of COVID-19 mandates. And we also had a... governor potential... from, I believe, let me double check. Arizona. Sorry, she went on Fox the other day and absolutely ripped Bret Baier a new one. And we're going to listen to that because it is so good. And then I want to revisit, we've covered the court cases going on in BC, but we didn't get into the details of the Rocco Galati case, and I want to go through that with you because he absolutely thrashed, like, and I mean destroyed, the government's defense attorneys, like absolutely demolished them. So we're going to go through that as well. But first, what I want to do is I want to focus on the fact that we've got a billionaire south of the line coming out and telling us that, Biden's gas price blame game says only thing that will fix inflation. He's basically going to bat for what you and I and everybody else knows. Now this article has one of those read along things, and the title reads: oil billionaire blasts Biden's gas price blame game, says only one thing will fix inflation. This is by Tom Ozimek, and it was written on June 27th, 2022.
Oil billionaire blasts Biden's gas price blame game, says only one thing will fix inflation. New York billionaire and refiner John Katsimatidis, who owns hundreds of gas stations, blasted President Joe Biden's pinning the blame on high prices at the pump on gas station owners, arguing there's only one solution for inflation: boosting production of crude. Katsimatidis made the remarks in an interview on Fox News on June 24th. After being asked to comment on Biden's call to gas station owners to bring down the price you are charging at the pump to reflect the cost you are paying for the product. Do it now. Do it today. Your customers, the American people, they need relief now, Biden said at a White House press conference on June 23rd, in which the president called for a federal gas tax holiday, urged oil companies to use their profits to boost refining capacity, and leaned on gas station owners to pass along lower crude oil prices by lowering prices at the pump. Ridiculous to put it on us. Katsimatidis reacted to Biden's remarks by defending gas station owners, arguing that they've been making the same margin that we've been making forever, as they have to cover payroll and pay rent, electricity bills, and other operating expenses. While the margin gas station owners make fluctuates several cents one way or the other, Katsimatidis said it's ridiculous to put it on us. We're not the ones that created the problem. The price of gasoline has nearly doubled since Biden took office, with the president variously blaming oil industry greed, a lack of refining capacity, global supply shortfalls set against a sharp post-pandemic rebound in demand, and the war in Ukraine. Some experts and industry insiders have argued that the Biden administration's anti-fossil fuel policies have discouraged companies from investing in refining capacity. It's not the war in Ukraine. It's really domestically caused constraint on the supply side, said Ross McKittrick, a professor of economics at the University of Guelph in Ontario and expert on energy and environmental policy, in a recent interview with the Epoch Times. Nobody's willing to invest in expanding refinery capacity because the outlook from everything that the government has said is you won't get the approvals, he added. McKittrick's view was echoed by Chevron CEO Mike Wirth, who said in a recent interview that he does not believe another oil refinery will be built again in the United States, arguing that government policies are the key factor. We've seen refineries closed. We've seen units come down. We've seen refineries being repurposed to become biorefineries. And we live in a world where the policy, the stated policy of the U.S. government, is to reduce demand for the products that refiners produce, Wirth said. Still, American drivers facing pain at the pump could see some relief from economic headwinds and reduced demand, if not from gas station owners squeezing their margins or refiners finding ways to process more crude. No denying Biden has some blame. Oil prices have retreated over the past 2 weeks amid broad market concern over an economic slowdown, as soaring inflation has pushed central banks to tighten financial conditions by hiking rates. The drop in crude prices has led gas stations to reduce prices at the pump, with the national average for a gallon of gas landing at $4.897 on June 27, according to AAA. Several weeks ago, that figure stood at over $5 a gallon, while a year ago, the national average for a gallon of gas was $3.095. Some gasoline market experts, like GasBuddy analyst Patrick DeHaan, predict further drops. We're down to $4.88 per gal with gas prices down for the second straight week. A third is possible, with prices by July 4th falling to $4.75-$4.80/gal, DeHaan wrote in a recent tweet. What's DeHaan's take on Biden's role in high prices at the pump? There's no denying Biden has some blame for rising gas prices, but it is far, far from 100%, he said in a tweet, while agreeing 100% with a comment that pinned the blame on a massive demand disruption related to COVID-19 combined with a sluggish domestic production response driven by the desire to use profits to repair damaged balance sheets when oil prices crashed at the beginning of the pandemic. Open up the spigots. For his part, Katsimatidis said in the interview on Fox that there's only one fix for the current inflationary spike, a big part of which is due to soaring energy costs. We have 100 years worth of oil, he said. Open up the spigots. If we open up the spigots and flooded the market with oil, with crude oil, American crude oil, we bring the price of oil back and inflation goes away, Katsimatidis said. Petrus.
So, it echoes the exact same problem we have here. You guys know my opinion on this. I'm in the energy sector. I can flat out tell you that the biggest portion of your price at the pumps is taxes. It's all taxes on your fuel. But it's the same problem up here. We have an anti-oil federal government that is harboring basically foreign investment or any major projects. They've got so much red tape for any major projects that they've basically got the production of the Canadian energy sector hobbled. Nobody wants to invest in this country. Nobody wants to drill, even though the companies have to maintain their licenses. So when the prices are this high and the activity is as slow as it actually is, that tells you that it's just one thing. There's only one thing in Canada that you can blame for your high gas prices, and that is piss poor government policy and basically micromanaging an independent sector that has no need for government oversight in every actual area that is already got regulations upon licensing upon everything, every type of regulation you can possibly imagine. Already happens. So the fact that they're doing now environmental or gender impact studies on oil projects before they go just goes to show that all they're trying to do is slow it down and make it so impossible to drill in Canada that, that everybody would go elsewhere. Now, if you're a multi-billion dollar, let's say, global investor, and you've got the opportunity to drill a well in Canada as opposed to, let's say, Venezuela, where you've got minimal safety concerns, oil's probably similar to depth, and you're lifting costs and everything are way cheaper in Venezuela. Are you going to go to Venezuela, or are you going to jump through all the fucking hoops that the fascists that masquerade as liberals have put forth on the energy sector in Canada? You're not going to invest in Canada, are you? So it's the same problem here. You got the exact same problem going on here. You've got, just as I described it, a micromanaging government that's got their fingers into every nook and cranny of the oil patch, and it's hobbling the industry. And the only reason that we are seeing the prices that we are is because they won't approve fucking pipelines across this country. You know how easy it would be for us to be energy independent in this frickin' country? Just give the nod to a couple of pipelines. Like Energy East, if the West was actually supplying the Irwin refineries out east, we literally could regulate our own prices here. And we would have no need to bring in Saudi Arabian oil here at all. Anyway, my friends, let's get the show started. We'll be right back. Welcome, friends, to Canadian Patriot Radio, where conspiracy is not theory and political corruption finds the spotlight. CPR, we are committed to upholding Canadians' God-given rights to life, liberty, and freedom with all thy sons. Command. All right, welcome back, my friends. What we're going to do next is we're going to focus on the fact that James Topp has made it to Ottawa. And we're going to kind of also highlight the fact that the mainstream media is just turning a complete blind eye to this. They want nothing to do with anybody that speaks out against their globalist vaccine-pushing masters. So True North did a great job of covering this story. So we're going to turn it over to True North, and we will comment after like we always do.
Canadian Armed Forces veteran James Topp arrived in Ottawa on Thursday, ending his monumental 4,000-kilometer walk across Canada in protest of federal vaccine mandates and other heavy-handed restrictions. Topp was met with an army of freedom-loving supporters that were there to cheer him on and walk with him as he took his final steps of his incredible journey. And I wanted to ask some of these people why they made the trip to the capital to see and walk with James Topp.
As a veteran, I was inspired. I had to come here. I just had to. Like, there was no stopping me. Nothing would stop me from being here. And again, to see how many people were here to meet James, to listen to his speech was I'm sure brought a tear to everybody's eye. I'm just so proud to be here.
To be here, it's a historical moment in Canadian history. This James Topp, who's walked from Vancouver to Ottawa for all of us, he's not doing it just for himself, but for all of us. And for me, I was thinking this morning, every kilometer of pain, of perhaps despair, hope, and wishing for Canada to wake up. To me, it's like a wake-up cry. Like, please, let's wake up collectively.
I came because I am in Canada, and I've never been to Ottawa on Canada Day. So this is going to be probably the biggest and the most memorable Canada Day we ever have. 150th won't even hold a candle to it, I don't think. So
I've been following him on social media, and I live in Montreal, and it's just my patriotic duty to come and support this guy for all the services that he's given and for all the strength that he's shown to walk every step that he's walked. And I'm going to join him at the end.
Well, James Todd left about, 4 months ago to come down here. I find he didn't have, the media wasn't out there, to support him. And I was one of the bikes on the Rolling Thunder, and I said, we got to support our military and support James.
In response to Topp's anticipated arrival, as well as planned Freedom Canada Day celebrations, the city of Ottawa decided to restrict access to the downtown, and the Government of Canada installed fencing on Parliament Hill and at the Supreme Court. Given that James Topp's arrival was deemed to be a celebration, I wanted to ask some of his supporters what they thought was there to fear.
The narrative of fear continues with the Mayor of Ottawa, the Liberal Party, the NDP, the press, excluding the Great True North, of course. And it's easy to succumb to fear, and it's a natural inclination to just stay away or to condemn instead of just using your critical thinking side. I think we Canadians, I implore my friends, my brothers and sisters in Canada to get to wake up.
There's nothing to fear the last time, there's nothing to fear this time except love. And if you want to stand back from that, then I guess you better leave town. Because it's going to happen one way or another.
I personally live downtown, in downtown Ottawa, and I was there when the truckers were here, I was there almost every night. I never felt so much love. I never got so many hugs. I never was fed so freely. The homeless people were giving me food. So, yes, it's a huge, huge misconception that there is any danger at all.
It's like the Ottawa convoy. There was nothing. The only time that you feel scared a bit is when you see all the cops showing up to where you are. Then you realize something's going to go wrong because there's too many cops. That's when that's the issue cops are having in Ottawa right now, is they're being, people think that they're just coming towards them to stop them because that's what the mayor wants them to do. Like, we're afraid of jaywalking so we don't get put in jail or stop or seize our trucks or anything, you know. If you look around, everybody's respectful to each other. Even when I was in Ottawa or even here today, I talked to the cops. They're nice, you know, everybody, they're doing their job. But there's always elites higher than them that are stirring all this up.
You know what? Wouldn't have mattered what they blocked off. The people got to meet James Topp. You know what? The fact that he spoke in front of the war memorial and his speech about the war, like, look at that. Those men and women, that's what made Canada. I'm sorry, but that they couldn't stop us from being there.
As you saw, a lot of Canadians were there, very happy to support veteran James Topp as he ended his incredible march. For more coverage of Freedom events, visit tnc.news and consider making a donation to support our ongoing work to bring you quality, objective, independent journalism. For True North, I'm Ily Quentin-Nantel.
So much like before, You've got municipal government with the Ottawa government pushing fear. obviously, the feds are probably doing the same thing. And then now we know, like, the corrupt Ottawa police are also doing the same thing. Everybody's pushing this fear campaign against anybody that comes to Ottawa to protest, to legally protest. You have the right to do that. You have the right to assembly. You have the right to all of it. So the only thing they can play is fear against anything. And this is all, it's more of Canadians coming together to fight unconstitutional mandates that basically are illegal. Like, if you want to get down to the brass tacks, it's amazing what we've witnessed in the last 2 years. It should be a wake up call to absolutely everybody. The federal government has shown us its true colors. They're fascists. That's what they are. They want nothing more than tyrannical control over every aspect of your life, and they're going to do it. Now we know they're going to do it through healthcare, and then through that, we watch them overplay their hand with the Emergencies Act and start confiscating people's bank accounts, locking them up with no charges. Like, this is not, if you're under the false illusion that this is a democracy at this point, you need to give your head a shake, because they showed you exactly what and who they are. They're fascists that masquerade under other titles. So congratulations to James Topp, and what a way, you know, to make it there on Canada Day. What a way, like, hat tip to this amazing veteran. Here at CPR, we followed the whole story, even though I didn't report on it as much as I should have, just because this crazy world always has other things that seem to pull me away. I've been following his whole journey, and nothing but respect and a huge hat tip from CPR, James Topp. Way to go. Way to go. We're behind you 100%. Okay, let's kind of stay on what it was that James Topp was marching for. And this next article comes to us by way of the Epoch Times, Epoch, I don't know how you say it, Epoch, I guess, we'll go with that. And the title reads, Canada's coercive COVID-19 mandates a tragic error. Former Ontario Chief Medical Officer. This is by Andrew Chen. It was written on June 25th, 2022. Canada's public health agency made a tragic error by grounding its COVID-19 response policies on coercion rather than persuasion, which was a key medical principle that had been thrown away during the pandemic, according to Dr. Richard Shabazz, a former Ontario Chief Medical Officer of Health. Shabazz, who served as Ontario's top doctor from 1987 to 1997, said on June 24th that the public health principle that he practiced for decades was based on persuasion, not coercion, and would hardly resort to legal powers in medical interventions. He said that government's COVID-19 vaccination mandates have backfired, as instead of meeting the intention of getting more people vaccinated, they have resulted in more people being turned away in the long run. By polarizing the issue, by making it a question of coercion, they've taken a group of people, many people who would have been persuaded to take the vaccine, and lock them down as being opposed to vaccines because they don't want to be forced, he said. I think it's a tragic error. Shabazz made the remarks during the Citizens Hearing Panel, an independent inquiry that scrutinizes the impacts of COVID-19 mandates and restrictions on Canadians. Panelists include former Reform Party leader and MP Preston Manning, retired Ontario pediatrician Dr. Susan Nitesh, and David Ross, president of the Canadian COVID Care Alliance, which co-hosted the three-day event that concluded on June 24th. He said it is also important to have a holistic view of a person's health conditions or determinants of health, which are other aspects of people's lives that are critical to their health conditions, which include education, employment, and social connectedness. Health was more than just the absence of disease. It was a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being, he said. The last 2 years, we've completely lost sight of that. Not only is health all about disease, it's all about one disease, and that is all about COVID case counts. One major advancement in Canada's medical system over the past 50 years was the recognition of evidence-based experiments rather than experts' advice, experts' advice when determining whether a certain medical procedure is effective, Shahabas said. But the public health measures rolled out during the pandemic are based on the less reliable observations and models. Beginning in March 2020, basically the whole world panicked. We accepted uncritically speculative mathematical models, which said that 40 million people were going to die in the world by midsummer, he said, referring to a 2020 report published by the Imperial College London in the United Kingdom, which has a massive discrepancy with the 6 million fatalities actually recorded over the past 2 years. Shabas also questioned the scientific basis behind mandatory masking mandates and lockdowns. At the onset of the novel coronavirus, he said, governments should have looked at evidence-based studies such as a 2019 World Health Organization report on influenza, which stated that there was no evidence that face masks are effective in reducing transmission of laboratory-confirmed influenza, which the overall effect of contact tracing was limited. We panicked and we resorted to a whole range of so-called control measures that were dubious, that were of dubious effectiveness, he told the panelists. The WHO report reviewed several studies with simulation models, and it said only one study suggested a combination of contact tracing with quarantine, which was estimated to protect at most, which was estimated to provide at most modest benefit, while it was well, it would considerably increase the number of quarantined individuals. So that's kind of like what we've all been against, is these mandates, these overreaching tyrannical mandates that realistically have no basis in science whatsoever. Like you heard what he was telling you. They based it all on modeling. Well, where else have we seen this before? We've seen it with climate change, and you see these climatards, for lack of a better term, continually predicting the end of the world. They're doing it again. They're saying it's going to be, we've got what, 12 years now, and if we don't change the course of action that we're on, that man-made climate change is going to be irreversible. The sky is always falling, I guess, is what I'm getting at. And it's the same thing with COVID. And these models, like, how many times are we going to let very out to lunch, I guess, is what I want to go with, models determine our reactions to specific events in the world? Like, we are already so far past their narrative. We know that COVID was created in a lab. We know that it was given gain of function in Wuhan, and we know it was released intentionally. There's just no other explanation of how it went globally so quick. There just really isn't. Their timelines don't make sense. You know, they're saying that it got to New York in January of what, 2020? Well, like you guys have heard me say so many times on this show, it was in Southeast Saskatchewan in November of 2019. There was people getting diagnosed with unidentified respiratory infections in November in 2019. I know because I worked with some of them. And I mean, these guys were sick, like sick. So it was the original strand of COVID that was here. Anyway, it's just another nail in the coffin that the globalists just refuse to see, right? They just pretend that that everybody is unaware. They live in this little bubble where they self-feed their own information and they circle it back, and they think that the rest of the world is still playing along and that they haven't lost control of the narrative. Well, they've completely lost control of the narrative. The only people that don't know it are the globalist muppets, their governments and their press. Those are the only people that don't know that. And it's funny to watch them continually. Like, the fact that Canada is still making it difficult for unvaccinated people to travel in and out of the country is retarded. It is so retarded. Just an Idiot himself just supposedly just got COVID and then went to Rwanda, which is really odd. Those of you looking into that are probably wondering why he's in Rwanda when they just found a huge gold deposit in the neighboring country. So, and now you've got the EU denying Ukrainian refugees and sending them to Africa. For what? They're going to be free labor now? They're going to use the Ukrainians to work in their mines to dig up all this new gold seam that they found? Oh, it's sickening. So sickening. Like, we actually know everything that they're doing now, and they just pretend like we don't. Okay, my friends, what I want to do is I want to stay on the pushback against the COVID mandates, and I'm going to give you the details in the Rocco Galati case that I should have brought to you sooner, but I refound them. I refound the actual details, and you guys have got to hear this. This is from Action for Canada, and it was updated on May 31st. So we're about a month behind on this one, but it doesn't matter because it's so good. Now, this is written, Tanya Gaw, founder of Action for Canada, provides a brief overview of the court proceedings. Thank you, everyone, who attended in person at the BC Supreme Court in Vancouver. The court was filled to capacity, 78 seats, plus there were another 50 to 70 people outside the courtroom. The court proceeding addressed the motion to strike set forth by the defendants named in Action for Canada's statement of claim. Justice Alan Ross presided. It was an amazing day in court watching Rocco Galati in action. Rocco was brilliant as he argued the merits of the case in opposition to the motion to strike. Rocco pointed out that this is not a straightforward case such as a truck hitting a bicycle, but rather one of extreme complexity and huge public interest. Rocco meticulously provided case law, both Canadian and international, to defend our position as well as facts supported by evidence to counter the defense's accusations that the case was founded on conspiracy theories. Mr. Galati advised Justice Ross that the case is not based on conspiracy theories, but rather facts, and he can provide the evidence proving that Bill Gates funds Gavi and the WHO. Bonnie Henry has ties to Bill Gates and the WHO. Theresa Tam is tied to the WHO, and Justin Trudeau paid $1 billion to Bill Gates, and many more important points. The proceedings began at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and there were 7 lawyers representing the defendants. Mr. Witten, the lead counsel for John Horgan, Bonnie Henry, and other provincial Crown defendants, was the first to speak and provided a very weak submission. Mr. Witten provided no evidence to support his vague allegations and arguments that the statement of claim was replete with groundless conspiracy theories, deficient in substance, frivolous, convoluted, scandalous, irrelevant, costly, and an embarrassment and abuse of the court's process. Mr. Witten made further claims that the notices of liability were threatening and intimidating to those who received them, and the delivery of said documents was harassment. Mr. Witten spoke for more than an hour and covered several sections of the statements of claim in great detail. It was impressive to hear the merits of the case being spoken by the defense, and at times it became difficult to know if he was representing the defendants or the plaintiffs. As Mr. Witten read through the details of statement of claim, it only legitimized our position that the government has indeed violated the constitutional rights of Canadians, caused irreparable harm, and overstepped their authority. The lawyers representing the additional defendants named in the SOC provided their submissions, and it was clear that they also had no argument or evidence to support their reasons for the motion to strike. There was a break for lunch. Upon returning to the court at 1:30 p.m., Rocco began his response. As mentioned above, it was nothing less than brilliant and something to behold. Mr. Galati not only challenged Mr. Witten for referring to the case as a conspiracy theory, but also for making the absurd statement that it would be too much work and too costly to proceed with this case. Mr. Galati called out the provincial governments and the Prime Minister for spending an accumulative $1.2 trillion on COVID-19 measures that, by comparison, the cost of the case would be inconsequential. Rocco brought to the attention of the court Mr. Witten's lame and offensive efforts to discredit him by reporting that Rocco had 10 cases which were dismissed due to motions to strike, but conveniently failed to point out Rocco's nearly 600 reported cases that were won. None of his wins were revealed by Witten. Rocco pointed out these facts to remind the court that previous wins and losses are irrelevant. The case at hand is the only issue. Mr. Witten further failed to mention the thousands of cases that Rocco has argued in his 34-year career and the many wins he has achieved. Justice Ross thanked Mr. Galati for the information, and it rightfully elevated the level of respect due to Rocco. In closing, Rocco stood on the merits of the case and that it is a matter of public interest and should not be dismissed. Rocco added, "The Constitution does not kneel, bend, nor kiss the feet of public health officers or any public officials, including the legislatures. There is so much more to report, but these are some of the highlights." Live updates were posted during the proceedings. The defense lawyers were then given the opportunity to reply, but zero replied. None of them had a rebuttal. This is because they could not respond to Rocco's correction of the defendant's counsel's embarrassing misstatement and ignorance of the constitutional law and rights pleaded. We now await Justice Ross's decision, which may take up to 30 days. We will make an announcement once the information is made available to us. To access the court documents, visit the legal action page. Remember, freedom of speech, thoughts, and belief, and the right to life, liberty, and security of the person are guaranteed. We do not need to beg, barter, or ask for them. They are ours for the taking. So there you go. It's absolutely epic. I should have gotten into those details quite a bit sooner, but it's just, you guys needed to hear it, because the fight, the pushback against this tyranny is absolutely brilliant. Now, if this judge actually does strike this case down, that's going to say more about his credibility than anything else, especially when you hear the merits being argued in the case and the fact that the defense actually couldn't even rebuttal it. They couldn't even come up with anything. That speaks volumes, my friends. Absolutely volumes. They're trying to get it thrown out on just, they don't even have a legitimate reason to strike. other than made up words. So very cool to see where this is going. Like I said, we'll be following all these cases. There's four major ones that we'll be following all the way through as they go. So stay tuned to CPR for your updates on the actual case fights against these mandates. Okay, my friends, many of you are probably aware Dr. Zev Zelenko has passed away. He has lost his fight to cancer. And he was one of the foremost frontline doctors, right up there with Dr. Peter McCullough, that he created Z-Stack, which was the first time that we kind of learned about quercetin, vitamin D, and zinc. And so it's very unfortunate that we've had one of our frontline doctors that has consistently spoke out against COVID vaccines and everything like that pass on us. But I, you know, life is life. But it took me back to, I wanted to play you guys basically one of his better clips where he explains exactly what's going on with all of this. So let's turn it over to Dr. Zev Zelenko. This clip is roughly about 9 minutes long, and we'll comment like we always do afterwards.
First of all, I want to thank God for this moment. What I believe is going on in this generation is a war between two systems of thought. One system being that we're made in God's image and that life has sanctity, we have human rights, and as such, it's God's purview how many of us live on the planet, how long we live, if we live free. The other system of thought, which could be rooted in Darwin's survival of the fittest or eugenics, it probably started with the serpent in the Garden of Eden, but that system of thought believes that there is a hierarchy in humanity, that some people are better than others, and inevitably that reverts to three types of categories of people. One is the Superman, like Kant would say, the Übermensch. Then there's the human, the Mensch, and the Untermensch, the subhuman. Now, if that sounds familiar, that's because around 80 years ago, the Nazi ideology was built upon that type of system. The Nazis believed that they were descendants of Aryan gods. They believed that the Anglo-Saxons should be enslaved and serve them, and the subhumans, which I belong to, Slavs, the handicapped, political prisoners and so on, gypsies, they were meant to be thrown into ovens and become dust. Now, that ideology did not go away. It's just resurfaced now, but it's not anti-Semitic. It's completely rooted in something else. The elite, so to speak, they think they're evolved. I think they're devolved. What they believe is that because of their wealth, power, intellectual superiority, so they think, that gives them the right to decide how many of us should be on the planet, how long we should live, who should be free, and so on. And so if you notice, any totalitarian dictatorship, the first thing they try to do is get rid of houses of worship. And it's very simple why, because if I bow down to God, I'm not gonna bow down to them. And so what's happening, the mechanism that they're using is fear. There's a global mass psychosis where these depraved animals, what they've done is use the media and created a false narrative that has led us to be living in chronic anxiety and fear and human isolation. If anyone studied psychological warfare, you'll know that those two points, anxiety and human isolation, will cause most people to decompensate psychologically and become very vulnerable and gullible and easy to manipulate. And then they offer the false golden calf of this, so to speak, as a false promise, and people gravitate towards it as a short-term measure to relieve their anxiety. It's not intellectual, it's purely emotional. And if you challenge someone, even the most intellectual people, but who have fallen into this trap, if you challenge them, they become belligerent, because what you're really doing is bringing them back into that anxiety state that they so deathly don't want to be in. So the reality here is, I'm a big fan of King David and his Psalms, and he gives a very good prescription for life. He says, turn away from bad, do good, and live. You know, we thought we used to live in freedom. And you know, freedom isn't free. We were free, or we thought we were free, because of the sacrifices of the previous generations. The question is, will our children be free? And the answer depends, are we willing to sacrifice? This is our storming the beaches of Normandy moment. This generation has been tasked with the ability and the responsibility of looking at the primordial serpent right in the eye and saying no and decapitating it. And the only reason why this has happened is because we're letting it happen. Because there's many more of us than them. And the tactic of the enemy is to scare us and divide us. And when we're divided, that's when they could pounce at us in sections. And the answer, the solution to that, is to rise up in hopefully nonviolent civil disobedience, reject all tyranny, reject the dictates of the demented puppet in the White House, and realize that we are fighting a well-entrenched enemy that has a head start. However, we have something they don't have, which is called the God Scaler. This is a David versus Goliath situation, and we are the David, collective humanity of God consciousness. The enemy wants to destroy God consciousness. We have to go in the opposite direction. We need to instill into our children basic morality. And what I mean by that is, we should take our children out of public schools. For many years, the public school system has attempted to destroy the souls of our children by teaching them depravity, normalizing depravity. Many of you know that there were two cities in the Bible that were destroyed, Sodom and Gomorrah. And the question is asked, why were they destroyed? So one answer is because they were immoral, but that's not the answer, because every place was immoral. What was so unique about them? So one of the answers is they normalized immorality. They made it the law of the land. And that is a way of saying, God, we don't want you here. We reject you. And so we need to go in a completely opposite direction. We take our children out of the spiritual danger that they're in the public school system, and now the physical danger. According to the World Homicide Organization, they issued a decree that if your children are in school, that's implied informed consent, meaning that you could have prevented your children from going to school. The fact that you didn't and they're in school means that you are giving consent. So now they're attacking not only the souls, but the bodies of our children. You know, in decent societies, parents sacrifice themselves for the well-being of their children. This is a biblical war. This is a war that goes from the very beginning of creation itself. But we could reject it. We could say no. We can turn to God. And here's my advice. Creation is dynamic. It's every instant of time is an act of recreation. What that means is you're not alone. That means God is making you. And if he's making you, he's with you. So we know that anxiety, fear, only lives in the psychological and emotional space where the consciousness of God is absent. If you fill that void with God consciousness. By the way, it's hard work. To be mindful of the divine constantly is hard work. But so what? This is what's necessary in order to withstand this onslaught on the human soul, on the collective human soul, on the collective human goodness, and the fact that we're made in His image. So my blessing to the whole world, to all decent people, is rise up. This hill is worth dying on. It's time for us, this generation, to pay the price so that our children could live with God consciousness, with freedom, and be able to thrive. And whether or not that will happen is directly correlated to what we do now, today. And so it is my sincere prayer and hope that like-minded, God-consciousness and people should collate together into cities of refuge or decency. And even though the majority of the world are continents of tyranny, I know that, but nevertheless, a little light pushes away a lot of darkness. We all come from the same source. My four-year-old daughter one time told me, "Daddy, you're my brother." I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "Well, God is my father and He's your father." So we're all brothers and sisters, and we all are made in the image of God. We all are given the gift of consciousness, the gift of free choice, and we should all use that gift in the right way by choosing to put on the yoke of heaven and take the yoke of our own fears and the yoke of other people's evil agendas off of us. Because there's only one type of free person in the world, and that's someone who chooses to be a servant of God.
Man, I don't know how to add anything to that. Very powerful words. It's such a huge loss to lose him, because he was such a articulate, well-spoken individual. I'd been listening to him through all of this since the pandemic started, and he's just a brilliant man. So it's a huge loss for for our side to lose him. As you've I'm sure many of you have listened to him before. But that was just an epic, clip of his, and a very good way to say farewell to a warrior that was on the front lines for us from the start of this whole mess. Now, you heard him mention the puppet in the White House. That's going to segue into the Kari Lake interview on Fox. You guys have got to hear this, because she basically thrashes Brett Baer. Now, for a lot of us, the 2020 election, you know, we were watching Fox, and some of us still do. Like, I mean, Tucker holds a special place in most of our hearts because he does speak up as much as he can under the yoke of a network. But during the election, it was actually Fox that was reporting that some of the battleground states were won by Biden first. So we were able to break free from that, the left-right paradigm, and see that even the so-called right side of the media was actually just playing along into the same thing. but anyway, the fact that Arizona has a candidate for governor like Kari Lake is so cool. Now they cheap shot her, and they attack her on this tranny thing that's so stupid, and she basically throws it right back at Brett Baer. So you guys have got to hear this, because she just flat out tells you that the election was fraudulent. She speaks just like Trump. It's so cool to see the states taking back their power through people like Kari Lake. So let's listen to this interview on Fox, and then we'll chat about it afterwards.
Arizona primary features an intense contest for the Republican gubernatorial nomination. Last week, we spoke with candidate Karen Taylor Robeson. Tonight, we talked to GOP hopeful Kari Lake. Kari, thanks for being here.
I'm so happy to be here. I am the front runner here in Arizona and have been since day one, and I'm endorsed by President Trump, and we're doing really well. Our main person that we're looking out for right now is the socialist on the Democrat side, Katie Hobbs. That's who we're focused on.
Let me talk about what we just saw, which was this abortion decision and what it means in the states. Arizona has this trigger law that's similar to Mississippi in that it would criminalize abortions after 15 weeks. But you have a couple of different cities, Phoenix and Tucson, that they say they do not want to move forward with this. They said they're going to push back. And I'm wondering, if you're governor, what do you do about that?
Well, we're going to let the legislature pass the laws to protect the unborn. And we already have these laws on the books, and it's not surprising. We have socialist mayor running Tucson and one running Phoenix, and they're always trying to push back. We will protect the lives of the unborn in Arizona. And it's going to be very difficult for abortion clinics to survive and be open if abortion is illegal in Arizona.
Yeah. Wait, what about these abortion pills? Would you outlaw those or try to?
I think it's really scary that a young, afraid mother could be at home taking a pill and without medical supervision. It could be the end of the mother as well. So I would very much support banning those types of abortion pills.
What do you think the most important issue for your state is?
We've got a couple of important issues. We have a wide open border. We have fentanyl pouring in. We have the cartels with operational control. But that wouldn't be happening if we would have fair, honest elections. And we had a fraudulent election, a corrupt election, and we have an illegitimate president sitting in the White House. And because of that, our border is wide open. 5.5 tons of fentanyl was confiscated last year, enough to kill over 2 billion people. It's a weapon of mass destruction. And that's why we're going to secure that border starting on day one. After I take my hand off the Bible, we are going to issue a declaration of invasion. We're going to finish President Trump's wall, and we're going to send our armed National Guard to the border and stop people from coming across.
I've been down
there so many times, and people just pour in, and they got a smile on their face. Because with Joe Biden, they feel they're going to stay here forever, and when I'm governor, they're going back.
Just to circle back, you say that it's an illegitimate president. You say that the election was stolen. You speak a lot about this on the campaign trail. Talking about the 2020 election. This is the Arizona House Speaker, Rusty Bowers, testifying in front of Congress last week.
Anywhere, anyone, anytime has said that I said the election was rigged, that would not be true. There was no evidence being presented of any strength. Evidence can be hearsay evidence. It's still evidence, but it's still hearsay. But strong judicial quality evidence, anything that would say to me, you have a doubt, deny your oath, I will not do that.
He's a Republican, he's a Trump supporter, and that's what he said.
He's a rhino, and he hopefully will be defeated. He is an absolute rhino. Karen Fann even admits there were issues with the election, that it can't be certified. And here's what we have. 740,000 ballots that have no chain of custody. They cannot be authenticated, and they should not have been counted. 34,000 ballots that were counted 2, 3, and 4 times. People who moved who still voted in our election. There's a mountain of evidence, and I wish that the corporate media would start covering it instead of putting their head in the sand and acting like it didn't happen. We know what happened here.
Okay.
Just because we have a rhino saying it didn't happen.
I understand what you're saying. The Attorney General obviously has talked about this at length, saying that they instructed U.S. attorneys to pursue any specific credible allegations of substantial fraud, and he found none, including using very colorful language in his testimony. I understand what you're saying, but there have been, as you know, more than 70 court cases where there was not evidence, and there was not any state legislature or governor that failed to certify an election, including your own Republican Doug Ducey.
We did not have any court cases where the evidence was presented. We now have evidence that is admissible in a court of law, and I believe the day will come where we have that court case. We have an AG, Mark Brnovich, who has sat on a mountain of evidence and done nothing, including video evidence. We have the True the Vote evidence. We have people who do not want to uncover the truth about our election, and it makes me wonder if they're afraid they really didn't win in previous elections. But don't worry, because when I'm governor, we're going to get to the bottom of it.
And we will have honest elections. And you think that Arizona citizens, voters, want to spend a lot of time looking at 2020 instead of looking forward from 2022 and on?
I'm with them every single day. We draw record crowds. number one issue, because they know every other issue, from inflation to the a border being wide open, not being able to afford gas and groceries, all stems from this corrupt election. We want an election day, not an election month. We want paper ballots, and we want to get rid of these electronic voting machines, which is why I'm involved in a federal case right now to get them banned here in Arizona. All we want, Brett, is honest elections for our children and grandchildren. We want honest elections for Democrats, mm-hmm. independents, and Republicans. We want to know that when we go to bed on election night, when we wake up the next day, we find out who won before we go to bed, and we can live with that. But we can't keep having elections that nobody can live with, and we can't have this level of fraud anymore.
Understanding that every Republican leader in Washington says that Joe Biden is the legitimate president, everyone. But I understand what you're running on. But
They're sitting there in Washington. Understood. They're not here in Arizona.
This is what
we
you're
just
running
need some
on. I get it.
Let journalists me just, to come out here and dig through this.
Let me just ask you one thing. Obviously, as a candidate, you come under scrutiny. The Washington Post has a story today. It says Arizona GOP candidate who criticized drag queens was once a fan, according to a drag queen. This is the quote. Arizona GOP gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake, who has attacked drag queens as dangerous to children, attended the shows of drag queen Richard Stevens for more than 20 years and once hired him to perform at her home. Do you care to address that?
I do care. I actually do care to address that, and I'm really shocked. I'm actually appalled that Fox News would take a defamatory story like that, and we are pursuing legal action against this drag queen. I'm appalled that you would bring that up when you have not talked about our stolen election. You failed to talk about
it. We just spent three questions, Ms. Lake, talking about this. I just asked you a number of questions about it. I played the Arizona House Speaker.
This is the first of it.
Let's address this story that's in the Washington Post. Every candidate takes tough stories. I'm asking you to respond to it if you'd like to.
I'm happy to address it, but I'm really disappointed in Fox. I thought you were a little better than CNN. This is a person who I covered for decades, 20 years, and he's never been in my home. He says he's been in my home for a drag show. That's ludicrous. He's never been in my home. He's lied. We tried to serve him defamation papers.
Okay.
And he's so shady that we can't even track him down because he's not even welcome at the places he works.
I'm sorry, but this is the last question I'm going to ask. What about these pictures of you with him, Richard Stevens?
What about the
post? I've performed for Carrie's birthday. I've performed in her home.
That's not true.
I've performed for her at some of the seediest bars in Phoenix. I don't want to ask these questions. I ask you to address them.
I think you do want to ask them, but you don't want to ask about 2,000 mules. I think you do want to ask about this. This is absolutely ludicrous. I'm talking about drag shows in schools. This is what triggered this man. Somebody who goes to a drag show with female impersonators is one thing. We don't want our tax money going into drag shows at school.
Okay, I understand
and
what you're making a difference
the
there, but you're
I'm
saying his allegations are wrong, is
They're
what
false.
You're saying.
Yes,
okay.
I am.
Right.
And I'm really appalled that you would spend time on a false story like that. It's shocking.
Well, I think it's important to have candidates address things that are coming up that might affect a race.
Truly.
And I thought you would appreciate that.
But you didn't
ask
my opponent, the establishment opponent who was here last week, you didn't ask her about her votes to allow illegal alien students to get a lower tuition than American students. You didn't ask her about the 70 plus times that she raised tuition on American students. You didn't ask her any tough questions.
That's
and
not
here
true.
You have me on and you try to bring a defamatory story out. It's really sad. I
Ms.
thought
Lake,
there was hope.
I really appreciate your time. We thought we'd address all issues that are on the table. That is one of them being covered today. We thank you, and we'll cover the primary August
2nd. Please send reporters out to cover this corrupt election. We would appreciate it.
Thank you. Up next, the panel.
Boom. Carrie Lake just threw it in Brett Baer's face. Oh, how awesome was that? And she stayed on point. Even when he tried to shake her with this cross-dressing allegation, she still stayed on point. She brought up 2,000 mules. She brought up the evidence that was found in Arizona. You heard her talk about the ballots, the 700 and so thousand ballots and the 30,000 that were ran through like up to four times. She's got all the evidence. She's got all the access to the evidence, and she's actually sticking behind it. This is what you need to see not only in the U.S. You've got to see provincial leaders like this too. Our last election was fraudulent as well. Like we've discussed in previous episodes, you've got Elections Canada coming forward and admitting that they didn't count close to 200,000 or 204,000 mail-in ballots. And the win margin was, what, 197,000. So you've got a fraudulent election in Canada as well, and you've got nobody addressing it. It was a footnote. It was a frickin' footnote that you could tell the mainstream media had to report and didn't really want to. But it wasn't picked up. It wasn't picked up by anybody. Nobody caught that except for us here at CPR. But anyway, can you imagine having premiers like Carrie Lake? Can you imagine having someone that stands up for what her people are actually telling her? I wish her all the best. I think she's going to win. I hope she gets Arizona, because if she does, there's no way that they're going to get away from what happened in Arizona along with the other battleground states. So if you've got governors that are truly for the people that win in the battleground states in these midterm elections, they're not going to be able to walk away from the election fraud of 2020. So all the we wish Carrie Lake all the best of luck, and I hope she wins. I think she will. I think she's a shoo-in. When you listen to her talk, she's extremely confident. I think she's got it in the bag. And like you heard her say at all her rallies, she's selling out the house, right? So she's got the same momentum that Trump had in 2016, and I think that they won't be able to unless they cheat her. Unless they cheat her out of her spot. But she's the type where she would blow the lid right off it. So it's wicked to see. Anyway, my friends, that's where we're going to end this one. So like always, if you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Facebook. It's Canadian Patriot Radio. Use the message button to send me any material that you think is show worthy. If you prefer email, it's CanadianPatriotRadio@gmail.com. I always encourage all the listeners to join the Telegram room, which is t.me/CPR_2. And if none of that is the way you want to go, then visit the website at CanadianPatriotRadio.ca. Thank you so much for tuning in, my friends, and until next time, in all thy sons, command.
For joining us for another episode of Canadian Patriot Radio. CPR is not filmed before a live studio audience. If you like the show, friends, make sure you give us a thumbs up and share us on all your social media platforms. Until next time, take care.
It's over!